Well, hello, everybody, and welcome back to X-Files Diaries. I'm Annie.
I'm Jen.
And today we are going to be discussing a rather controversial episode, wouldn't you say, Jen?
I think it is.
Especially in Shipperland.
Yes.
Season 4, The Field Where I Died. We have some really interesting conversation, hopefully, coming up with that. But before we get to that, let's get to some tweets of the week.
He's made outrageous public statements on an internet site.
That wasn't him. That was me. And they're not outrageous.
Okay. Tweets of the week. These were in response to our top 10 hottest moments on The X-Files, which I think was well received during these tiring and sometimes chilly times.
There was
a lot of hotness, was there not, Annie? We were heating things up that time.
Oh yeah, I really appreciated a lot of the tweets we got, which we're going to tell you guys right now.
Yeah, folks were inspired and I'm pleased.
Mm-hmm.
Kathy G says, I think you covered most of my favorites, but this one always deserves an honorable mention. Frustrated, angry, scruffy Mulder is flame, flame, flame emoji. There's going to be a lot of flame, flame, flame emojis tonight.
Uh-huh.
And the clip that Kathy G shows us is indeed frustrated, angry, scruffy Mulder from F Emasculated. Luckily, Kathy has clued us into the episode on that one. He does look, he's got like he's licking his lips a little bit. He's a little bit scruffy. I do enjoy scruffy Mulder, I must say.
He's got his tongue out a lot. Yeah.
Yeah.
This exact screen cap she picked was quite good, although I think it is a GIF, but it is
it's a GIF.
It is
screen capped it for the purposes of reading the tweet, but the whole GIF can be enjoyed.
It's a very, very good point. Any episode where he's scruffy, I always feel like, I mean, F Emasculata may not be the best example of this, but I feel like it's always when he's like worried about Scully. Like, I know in one breath, he's very particularly scruffy. I know in Fight the Future, when he's like traveling across the world, he's particularly scruffy.
Yep.
So,
yes. Dwayne Barry, the end of Dwayne Barry. He's very scruffy, or Ascension, rather.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is a good look on him, especially.
Very
there's
good.
Something about the combination of scruffiness with a suit that I particularly enjoy, that sort of juxtaposition.
Oh, I'm thinking of like My Struggle 3. Like,
so am I, actually.
Yeah, season 11 Mulder with that scruff clearly on a mission to protect Scully again. Yes, I enjoy this pattern.
He's wearing his white shirt there with the sleeves rolled up, I do believe.
Yep,
that's a good look.
Yeah, thank you for that, Jen.
Yeah.
Heating things up real early in this episode.
Woo! Okay.
Love it.
Okay, from Monica Filefan. Monica says, phew, that was a lot to handle, ladies, right? I agree with every single one of these, and I have several others throughout the series that make me, and she's included kind of like the wet drops emoji, so I'm not totally sure if we're going to say like sweat or wet,
maybe,
but
something
it makes
else.
Her one of those two things.
Yeah.
But Matt Mulder is always peak hotness for me. Yet this, flame, flame, flame. And Monica includes a GIF of Mulder at the mirror in I Want to Believe, which Annie included as one of her very, very hot moments. Was that your hottest moment? That was one of your hottest moments.
That was my hottest moment. Since that's Monica, I'm going to say that the wet squirts is the second thing. That I'm going to just posit a guess there. Just saying.
The emoji speaks for itself, I guess. It's open to interpretation to some extent. Monica also mentions adding in one of my fave hot Scully moments is Protective Scully. Holy shit. And she includes a GIF. And I am not sure exactly which episode this is from, but Scully looks amazing in it. Walking like with a sense of purpose and hotness in her eyes. Off to protect and save her Mulder, I suspect.
It is from actually Grotesque. I asked
that's from
Monica.
Grotesque. Thank you. Thank you, Monica. Excellent. Oh, yeah. That's probably why I don't recognize that. Who knows how long it's been since I watched Grotesque. But maybe I should rewatch it with that hauntness going on.
Oh, yeah. Grotesque is underrated. Good one. It's a good one.
I think it is. I think it's just one of those ones I kind of forget what it is. So I just kind of like that title just doesn't quite ring a bell with me. And so I'm like, yep, whatever.
It's like Profiler Mulder. Like back.
That's
like,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's all that Profiler stuff. I keep forgetting that that's what that episode is. Okay. Noted. Mm-hmm. For watching.
Mm-hmm. Plenty of hotness.
Yeah, absolutely. From Kaz, Flood Queen GB, good Friday afternoon work podcast listening. Boring but essential work I needed to do has been done to this. Smiley face. Feel the need to rewatch a number of episodes following this podcast. but agree with you, the X-Files can make simple glances and touches hot. Flame emoji. Yeah, Kaz, right? Mm-hmm. That is just the whole thing. I'm so glad we were able to make your work a little less dull as well. Boring but essential is pretty much kind of the description of almost everything I do at work, actually. So that's a pretty good description. from Erica Deb, Erica says, I would like to submit this scene to the list. And Erica provides a lovely array of screen caps from the scene in The Red and the Black, where Scully's undergoing hypnosis and recalls her experience with the UFO. And it is one of these ones that's kind of like, it's sort of accidentally hot because it's, let's be honest, it's mostly the sounds that Scully is making.
Yeah.
It kind of, and you know, she clutches Mulder's hand. That's pretty hot too.
Yeah. Oh.
And that sense of sort of vulnerability from Scully. And I mean, she's just really kind of like, it's all happening. She's just letting it all out while she's under hypnosis. And there's no question. There's a certain amount of hotness there. All right. My mind was wandering there.
It's similar to the Never Again tattoo thing, except I think that like the tattoo is like meant to be hot, whereas I don't necessarily think this was meant to be hot, but it still is. So
it's kind of, it just turned out that way. Like, I mean, certainly I've heard more than one person say, if you listen to this with the sound on and someone is like not watching it at the same time you are, they're going to be like, what the hell are you watching? So
it's rather suggestive. Yes.
She just can't help it. Erica also says, Jen was talking about how sexually charged season one was and how they had to pull back on it. Character wise, maybe at the beginning, Mulder and Scully had a sexual attraction, but as their feelings deepened, they kept these moments more hidden from each other because they meant more to one another. I like to think that a moment like the one in Ice was too dangerous for them later on because it could easily lead to more. I think that's a really interesting concept and point and idea that Erica has there. What do you think, Annie?
I actually really like that, and I really agree, because I've always suspected that both of them initially have an attraction that's not just a friendly attraction. It's an attraction at the beginning. And part of me, and I think they put it aside for their own various reasons. I feel like Scully puts it aside because she wants to be respected in her job and her partnership, and she's let work and partnership and personal pleasure get in the way before. Doesn't want that to happen. And I think, you know, given the history and the development we see with Mulder, he has the same fear. I mean, when you think about what happened with him and the foul one who shall not be named. I mean, I can I think that he could easily have been like, no, that's not happening again. So, I mean, I feel like both of them could have pulled back out of duty or honor or respect. It doesn't mean the attraction wasn't always there. So I agree with that take. I really like it.
Yeah, I really like that idea that, like, as the relationship becomes increasingly important in their lives, they want to take fewer risks to sort of upset the balance. So
yeah,
that's cool.
I always think that the whole idea of not wanting to quote-unquote risk the friendship is such a bullshit excuse in general, like in normal day-to-day life. But I actually really think both of them have a very valid excuse to say, because of all of the stuff they're involved in and how much is at stake.
Absolutely.
So I think
a lot is at stake. And there's and there's lots of different reasons. Like you say, you know, there's, you know, their past in terms of their working relationship, and also, how much is at stake sort of externally to themselves, and also how much is at stake within their relationship, because they don't, especially as time goes on, they have fewer and fewer connections with anyone other than each other. So that becomes an awfully important relationship.
And how much is at stake with the X-Files as far as how much they've become involved in, and how important staying on that course is to them.
You don't want to screw up saving the world just because you couldn't keep your hands off each other, right?
Exactly. I mean, I know people make fun and they're like, it took them so long, but I'm just kind of like, I get it. Like, I get why you would hold off on those sorts of situations when you have all of this other stuff going on. It makes sense.
They had some important stuff on their plate, so, you know.
Yeah.
It was there, but, you know, they just tried, they tried to control it as best they could for as long as they could.
And not so well sometimes.
Not so well, obviously, based on all of these hot moments that we've all noticed. From Ray Noel says, Mulder and Scully serving hotness for the past 27 years. Thank you, ladies, for that extensive hot research. Oh, trust us, Ray Noel. It was our pleasure. But this was missed. Am I the only one who still finds this hot? And Ray Noel has sent us a gif of Beto Mulder getting out the pool and Krycek kind of checking him out and sort of like waving his hands in Mulder's general direction. And like from a certain angle, it almost looks like he's slapping his ass, even though he's not actually. But you can kind of imagine that if you're the kind of crazy person like myself who kind of has a little sort of something for Krycek and Mulder together. So, yeah, you know what? I mean, there's no mistaking where Krycek's looking. That's for sure. So thanks, Raina Ball, for pointing out that little moment.
You've gone off on quite a tangent here, Jen, but I think that she was just referring to the Speedo, I gotta say.
I don't know if she was.
Really?
I think there was perhaps a little discussion about what was happening with the hands.
Oh, okay, okay. Yep. Fair enough.
I'm obviously like reading my own sort of
I'm sorry
obsessively shippy slashiness into this.
I can't go there with you. I apologize. I can just watch this scene and just be disappointed that we didn't get Scully seeing him in a Speedo. That's all I think of.
It's fine.
But to answer her question, whatever
turns your crank.
Right. To answer her question, I considered it. It just felt too obvious, which is why I didn't put it on my list. Kind of like the yellow pajama pants. It's like a pretty obvious answer. But it probably...
It's hot, though.
At the same time, I mean, I feel like ice was a really obvious answer. And so... And it still made our list. So I don't know. Yeah. It's very worthy of being
definitely
on the list.
I mean, honestly, we could have gone 50 yeah. top 50 hot moments and they all would have been worthy. It's just like how many there, you know, one from every episode would have been easily achievable.
Yeah, absolutely.
Daniela Amodio, Danny says, thanks for another thoroughly enjoyable episode, ladies. May I mention a slightly underrated moment? The look Mulder gives Scully at the end of Je Souhaite after she asks what was his wish in the end. It goes from eyes to mouth and back, plus a smile, and it's really a lot. It really is, Daniela. And Annie, of course, to the rescue, provided a gif of that moment as well on our Twitter feed.
Oh,
and,
of course I have that gif. I didn't. Yeah. It's the second that I read that tweet, I was like, oh, yeah. I know exactly what this person's talking about.
And
I'm going, No, exactly. And that look is a lot. It is indeed.
It is a lot. I must say, I'm not sure I ever fully, I mean, that whole moment is obviously, you know, feels very hot to me, but I hadn't quite noticed the whole eye contact, where the eyes are going situation. And yeah, that's very hot.
Mm-hmm.
It is a lot. So thank you for reminding us about that, Daniela.
And the way he just kind of turns and like sips his beer. I don't know, the whole thing about it. It's just,
I mean, he's got the lips going on to the beer bottle, which is all very sexy.
Very good.
It's just a lot happening there. So yeah. Okay. And from Fleetwood Snack, this episode was flame, flame, flame emoji. Love all these moments, and I could add so many more. And Fleetwood Snack includes a gif from Our Town of sort of hostage Scully being rescued by Mulder, and he's kind of like stroking her hair. That is kind of like one of those unintentionally hot moments, is it not, Annie? It
very much so. This is one of those that's like not supposed to be this hot, but it just
it's
is.
Supposed to be
they
hot.
Can't help themselves.
They can't. I mean, that look on Scully's face, it's like, whoo.
Yeah.
Thanks for that, Fleetwood Snack. But my biggest takeaway from the ep is that there is equally as much, if not more, that wasn't meant to be hot, but just is because of David and Jillian. Bless them for that. Praying hands emoji. And can I say, it's one of the most delightfully sort of sacrilegious uses of the praying hands emoji, which I really appreciate. And then Fleetwood Snack says, gonna go write smut. And that's like, to me, that's like, could we have a higher praise for our top 10 moment hot moments that we've inspired someone to write some smut?
Yeah, I appreciate
that. So happy about that. I really appreciate that.
Writing and reading smut is a nice outlet after an episode like this. So,
it's just the X-Files demands a bit of smut occasionally because it's so much there.
Well, the episodes themselves just give you blue balls. So you got to go put it somewhere, you know?
Exactly. It's like we got to like do something with this.
Yeah.
We are not making this stuff up out of thin air. It is there, just not fully realized. And that's what fanfic is for. So thank God for fanfic. No wonder, you know, the X-Files was like right there at the forefront of fanfic back in the day, because it really is just the kind of thing that's crying out for it. Yeah. So thanks for sharing your hot moments with us, everyone. And we look forward to always hearing from you about any subject related to the X-Files. You can find us on Twitter at XFD Podcast. We look forward to chatting with you there.
Mold of the internet is not good for you.
All right, Jen, are you ready to have a little bit of a debate this evening?
Yeah, I'm ready, but you know, I think that we'll be very civilized about it. This is going to be a very interesting conversation.
I'm excited. Okay, well, here's the thing. I want to hear, before we get into the field where I died, actually, like, discussing the nitty-gritty, I want to hear both of our sort of relationships with this episode, because mine has been a process. I never liked it. I never liked it. And probably for all the same reasons that you are going to tell me that you don't like it tonight. Mm-hmm. And I feel like for that reason, I sort of just left it alone, and I didn't really watch it, and I never really revisited it, because for some reason it always just kind of made me not feel good. So I just didn't like to watch it. Recently, though, I don't know, I've been going through some more of my rewatches, and I've been watching it again kind of through a different sort of perspective. And first of all, I think there are a couple elements to talk about. The actual X-File, the actual case, and then, you know, the big humdinger of, like, the soulmate revelation, which is, I think, the thing that, you know, upsets so many people. But I think that these two things are far more intertwined than I think people give them credit for. And I think that, like, people tend to forget the rest of the episode. And I'm not sitting here just saying, oh, well, the rest of the episode is really good, because I actually think that's the case. But I'm saying, sorry about my dog. He's barking. He has a lot of things to say about this episode.
Yeah.
But the idea that, like, the soulmate revelation and Mulder and what he's thinking and how he's feeling is very much wrapped up with this case. I don't think it's, like, something that transcends this particular case, if that makes sense. And I mean, we can get into this when we start just discussing the actual nitty-gritty. But that's kind of why it doesn't bother me, is I feel like it's very much Mulder being Mulder. And I really actually enjoy this episode now. I think that it actually is very interesting in terms of encompassing all of the roles that Mulder and Scully play to each other, or are to each other, I should say. And I have a lot to say about it, but I want to hear you. I want to hear your journey.
Thank you. My journey is a short one. I saw this, saw it when it aired back in 96, in early season 4. So this is like pre sort of cancer arc time in the X-Files. And it caused me some considerable distress, as it did amongst the whole shipper community at the time, as I recall. I mean, this is very early on, and we have to kind of remember sort of the context of, we just had very little to go on in terms of shippers versus no Romos at that point. And it was a hot war.
Yeah.
And I wrote down in my notes, this episode came along like a grenade into that war. And us shippers felt like we had gotten the worst end of that. And so I didn't care for it, didn't have a good time. I straight up was not having a good time watching it. And I'm not sure if I've ever watched it again since, because I basically, the only way I could sort of deal with it in my shipper brain at the time, because I had to do something with it, and that was to pretend it didn't exist, to excise it from my brain and just gloss over it. No, we don't talk about that episode. And I think that now I've watched it again in anticipation of our conversation this evening, and I can see why it distressed me at the time, and it still does get me kind of riled up. But I have a different view of it now, slightly different view of it now, because we know everything that's happened since then. And
right.
In the context of everything that happened with the MSR for the rest of the series, this episode does not stand out quite so much and is not quite as distressing. But at the time, when it kind of felt like we really didn't know where Chris Carter was taking this relationship, and it was a very much an open question whether there ever would be any kind of romance between Mulder and Scully. At the time, it was kind of, we felt like this was a nail in our coffin, and it was distressing in the extreme. And so I just put my fingers in my ears, went la, 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 pretended it never happened. And I was very wary about watching it again. But first, I mean, I'll say, and we'll get into more details about this, that it is actually a really good episode.
Yeah.
And I want to like it. I want to believe. So this isn't the kind of thing where I'm going to say, nope, nope. Like, you know, I'm never going to like Bad Blood, for example. It's just never going to happen for me. This episode, I'm ready to like it, but I am going to need some convincing because I still have issues with it.
Okay. Well, I don't want to sit here and be like, I'm going to convince you to like it, but I just like the, I don't like the idea that people look at this episode and view it as damaging to the MSR, because I don't think that it is. And I completely agree with you, and I completely stipulate to the idea that if I were to have watched this in 1996, I would probably be very much on your side, at least at the time. But I feel like a lot of the time when we look back on something, it, like, you know, this is another one of those things. I think you have this really visceral reaction to this when you first saw it, and it's really kind of hard to shake that, even with all of the canonical evidence that we have gotten ever since. And I mean, the only way that I can square that with you still being upset is that you walked away from this episode thinking, well, one of three things. There's three things to tackle about this episode: what the writers believe. Yeah.
Right.
What Mulder believes.
Yeah.
And what the truth is.
Yeah.
And I think that what Mulder believes, well, let's tackle Mulder later, because I want to talk about, I want to talk about the writers first, because that's probably the most upsetting thing, I think, to people, because it seems to be like you're watching this episode and you think that the writers are telling you that Mulder doesn't belong with Scully. He belongs with this random ass girl that he is running into. But why do you think that? Why do you think that's what they're saying with this episode?
Why do I think that?
Yeah.
Good question. This is, did we say already, this is a Morgan and Wong episode, Glenn Morgan and James Wong, which I have to say I'd forgotten, because I'm a very big Morgan and Wong fan, both individually and as a team. And when I was rewatching this week, I'm like, fuck, this was a Morgan and Wong episode. This is going to be even harder for me to pretend it never happened. It's very well written, as it always is. So your question was, why do I walk away with the feeling that Mulder is destined to be with Melissa? That
the writer, why do you walk away from this episode that the writers are making that assertion that Mulder is destined to be with Melissa? Why do you walk away from thinking that?
I think that they just plain come right out and say it. I mean, when we're talking about the hypnosis scenes specifically, first of all, let me start talking about the first and last scene of the episode, which is the same thing, which is Mulder standing in a field with his clutching the pictures of Sarah and Sullivan, thank you, Sarah and Sullivan, looking very distressed, kind of at the time giving me the impression that he's like mourning for his lost love. Boo-hoo
no.
for you.
No.
Yeah, okay. And so
I don't see that. I really don't see that at all.
That one's open to interpretation. But beyond that, specifically in like the past life regression hypnosis, we have Melissa has one, Mulder has one. It seems obvious to me that they're establishing that Melissa was Sarah in a past life, Mulder was Sullivan in a past life, that they were lovers, that they were torn asunder from one another, that each says they would wait for the other. And Mulder makes a clear reference to the term souls coming together, souls mating, something along those lines when he's talking to during his hypnosis session, when he specifically says souls mate eternal. And he's talking about his husband. This is back in sort of his World War II.
No, he's not.
Moment.
He's not. He's
he
talking,
is.
He is talking about Scully.
I wish.
No, you need to look at the actual dialogue here.
Okay, let's look at it.
Let's look at it.
This is the key. This is the key part right here. Souls mate eternal.
Okay, but
because he says right out, he says, "Soul's made eternal. My husband is taken away from me."
Okay, but before that, he's talking about Scully. Okay, but listen, he's talking about Scully. Ma'am. He says, he's dead in the street. He is Scully, who we should bring out that we should mention that he finds Scully before he sees Melissa in both of these memories, which is important to note. He says, but now he's gone on now waiting for us. The souls come back together different, but always together again and again to learn.
Yes.
So to me, this means that all of these people, Scully, his father, Samantha, all of these people in his life, all of the souls come back together. It's not just Melissa, okay? It's all of the souls come back together to learn. So that includes Scully. And while we're talking about Melissa in this particular episode, what is he supposed to learn from Melissa in this episode? Because she says to him, we have come together in this life, in this time, only to meet in passing. She says that very clearly to him. To she me, does. That is it. In terms of this life, the one that matters, that is it. They're not lovers in this life. That is canonical. They are not lovers in this life. That role is someone else. That role is one of the other souls that he is supposed to learn. And what he's supposed to learn here and now from Melissa is how to save these people, how to find these weapons, how to solve this X-File. And I am not just saying this because I believe that this is like my fan wank to make this okay. I believe that this is actually what's going on. I feel like the point of what is going on with Mulder and his distress is that he is upset about his failure to save these lives, and his failure to stop what is happening. And he's frustrated that Melissa doesn't believe him. He's frustrated that Scully doesn't believe him. Skinner doesn't believe him. No one believes him. And at the end of the day, everyone dies. And in my opinion, I think that's what he's upset about at the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't think he's crying about her. He doesn't even know her.
Well, like, no,
it's ridiculous. It's the same way that he cries about all of the people that he gets attached to and then loses. Like Lucy in Obliette, I think of all of these young women that he has this attachment to, just like Samantha. I think of like that, who's the chick from Marty from All Souls? The one
Pam
from,
and Monday.
Yeah, Ruby. Yeah, yep. Ruby
there's
from
lots
Conduit.
Of examples.
There's a lot. I don't even need to go down
this
the list.
This is definitely a pattern. And I agree that his relationship with Melissa in this episode definitely is. I thought specifically of Oubliette, actually, when I was watching this last night. That makes total sense to me that he'd have. And to me, that I take some solace in the fact that watching the episode, that there, to me, is no romantic chemistry whatsoever between Mulder and Melissa in this episode.
Well, no, so I don't think that's what they're trying to say.
I do take solace from that, but I can't get past the fact that what they're giving us when they're talking about the past lives specifically is that Scully, yes, their souls are like linked, which is great. I mean, if there was no Melissa element to this story, if it was only about past lives and he had learned what he did about Scully, I would have been delighted with this episode and would love it because it's great. There's nothing wrong with what he learns about her. She doesn't have to have been his wife in a past life. That's fine. But the problem for me was that we're bringing in this other person, and that this other person in the two past lives that we hear about is very clearly his romantic partner, that he's talking about her specifically. When he says the phrase souls meet eternal, he's talking about his husband specifically in World War II, who is Melissa. And so we have, she is his romantic partner in both of his past lives, as spouse and whatever Sarah and Sullivan were to each other. Clearly they were romantically involved somehow. So that's my problem, is that just in terms of the roles they had, it's hard to kind of get past the idea that, and this idea that they were waiting for it, that they both use this phrase, I'll wait for you. I'm going to be waiting for you. And that seems very soul matey and very sort of like a very close connection. I agree that there's no sign of the connection in this life. And I think that where I'm at right now with the episode might be that I still have trouble not believing that Melissa and Mulder are supposed to be some versions of these people that are soulmates, but that maybe it doesn't matter and that in this life they're not meant to be lovers,
right?
But that their souls are still somehow meant to be together in another life. That's the kind of where I'm at in terms of where the best I can make of it. That's where I'm at. So please change my mind.
Well, I'm not trying to change your mind. I think that that's actually a fine way to think, because I don't think that that is, I don't think you're incorrect. I mean, I think that they clearly aren't soulmates in this life. You don't see Mulder ever talk about this again. He's not like laying in bed with Scully going, man, I can't wait for you to die so I can hook up with my soulmate. You know, that's not what is happening here, you know? And so, and I think that if this episode had taken place in season 7, then I would probably have a little bit more of a problem with it. But I think it's what's very important to know. And I have some script stuff to read to you too, which I think you might find interesting. But what I think is really important to think is that this is season 4 Mulder. Like, this is not a Mulder aware that he is in love with Scully. And so I think to him, and Mulder, we know Mulder, he's not looking for a girlfriend. He's not out like, oh my God, could this be the one? Like, there's no way. He's not thinking that. And so I think at the end of the day, what Mulder believes, because we don't have any proof that they're actual soulmates, which I'm going to come back to. We don't have any actual proof. We have a lot of evidence. We definitely do. But there is some evidence to the contrary that was cut from this episode, which I need to read to you. But the idea that Mulder thinks this might be something that's real, I think he finds far more sexy than Melissa. If that makes sense to you.
You think he's in love with the concept. The concept is sexy.
He is like, man, this would be awesome if this were true. If this were something that were true. I think Mulder is horny for the idea of past lives. That's what I think is going on here.
I think you could be right.
I don't think that it has anything to do with this specific person. I think this specific person is his connection to the concept. And I'm not to say he doesn't care about her, because Mulder cares about everyone. I mean, that's one of the things that we love about Mulder. He does not want her to die. He does not want her to think her life is pointless, because he's Mulder and he cares about her. Is he in love with her? No. If you walk away from this episode thinking that he's so sad that she died because he's in love with her, I don't know what to tell you, because I don't think that that's what anyone is saying. I really don't. I really don't. And I'm saying that like, I don't think that's what anyone is saying.
I agree with that for sure. There's no indication that they're in love, but I feel like there's an indication that they're a missed opportunity. That's kind of the vibe I get, is like, they were meant to be. What a shame that it was not meant to be in this lifetime, because apparently they're meant to be together in every other lifetime. And I mean, Mulder buys into this 100%. Like, he's calling her Sarah at one point and holding her hand. I'm very, very upset about that.
But he's trying to reach her. Like, he's trying to get her to believe him. He's trying to get her to believe him.
Yes, but it seems like it's a pretty touchy-feely moment. Calling her Sarah, he's like referring to her as his lover at that moment.
I know, but it's not his lover. It's not his, Mulder's lover.
Oh, I know. But he thinks he's Sullivan, though.
I think that he thinks that this is very possible. And I think he wants to use this information to, figure out what's going on with the soulmates thing. But at the end of the day, I think he wants to use this information to find the weapons, because that's what this episode is all about, is using this information to find the weapons. And he wants to save these people's lives. I mean, this is how I view this. And I think that the soulmate thing, while it definitely riles people up who are constantly on the lookout, like you and me and every other shipper, who are constantly on the lookout for like anything that even slightly indicates that these two are going to become lovers at some point. And at the time, like I said, this doesn't sound great. But I mean, what are they going to do? Make an episode in season 4 about the fact that Scully's his soulmate? Then the show is over. You know what I mean?
No, I don't expect that necessarily. I just wish they hadn't done this. Well, I wish no one had been Mulder's soulmate per se. They could have done a past lives episode that didn't have to use the words, souls, mate eternal, that kind of phraseology. That's, we could have cooled the whole thing down quite a bit.
Yeah, you're right, but I just, you are very focused on Sol's mate eternal.
I can't get past it.
But because I think it's up for interpretation, Jen. I don't think he's talking about my husband. He says, Cancer Man, evil returns as evil, but love, Sol's mate eternal. Then he kind of turns to start talking about his husband. This is a regression. This is not like the gospel truth. Like, I don't necessarily think that this is something that we can look at and be like, oh, he's definitely talking about his husband when he was just talking about Cancer Man. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
I agree, but his transition is about specifically about Soulsmate. That's a transition to talking about his husband. But I do agree that there is a question about whether he's a reliable narrator. And whether, you know, just because he believes this doesn't necessarily mean that it's true or that the writers want us to think that it's true. So that gets back to your original point at the beginning of this conversation, which was what are we to make of these different layers of meaning here? What are we as the audience meant to take from this? Are we meant to watch that and think, oh, well, Mulder just really is digging the eye. He's horny for soulmates. Mm-hmm. And so he's kind of inserted that concept into his hypnosis, which I kind of like that idea. Or are we meant to watch it and think, well, Melissa's his soulmate, and what a shame it wasn't meant to be in this lifetime, which is kind of, it's a, maybe a slightly more simplistic sort of reaction, but it just, like, I just kind of go into sort of like red rage mode, and I kind of forget to think sort of logically at that point, and I just don't even think about anything else. It's just like, get away from my man.
Well,
what
that's
are you doing?
What I'm saying is, I feel like you're honing in on like the one part in here that kind of disproves anything else, that says, okay, well, this, it says this, so it must mean this. And I don't think that's the case. I am focused on what he said before, which was the souls come back together different, but always together, again and again, to learn. I can't unsee that. He didn't just say that for no reason. Like, that's, yeah. I find that far more interesting. The idea that we have multiple soulmates and they are all in all of our lives, and every time they come back different. And I mean, yeah, in both of these two, what, that he visited out of an infinite number of past lives, Melissa was his lover in those two, but who's to say that that was the case in all other 100, 200 of their lives? There's no way to know that. And he's clearly honed in on her here. Mulder is very susceptible to regression, as we know. He is very much a prime candidate to like fall victim to this. And I need to read you something that I think you're going to find rather interesting, because there's a bit in the script that was cut out near the end when they're driving towards the field. This is after all of the regression and everything happens, and it says,
okay,
it's Scully's POV. She sees a road sign, and as it quickly streaks past frame, a large wooden road sign indicates Cavanaugh Road. Scully considers, looks about, seeing off screen another sign, Temple of the Seven Stars, Sullivan Field, 1 mile. Scully considers, turns to Mulder, shouting above the car's roar. Scully says, Mulder, this road is called Cavanaugh. The field is marked Sullivan Field. Mulder continues to drive, not hearing her. Scully continues, they're obviously named after those people. You subconsciously process the names. That's how you knew of their past existence. And then under that it says, like he cares. So I think that this scene indicates that they were definitely considering the idea that this is all not really happening. And typically in an X-Files episode, they do that. They give you enough evidence to look at both sides and say, I want this to be true. I want the other thing to be true. And knowing that this was put in the script makes me think that this gives us enough evidence that this could be something that Mulder is coming up with. I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I really like that bit. I wish they had put that in the episode. If that had been in the episode, then I would have had a totally different reaction to it, I think. I was reading today a little bit about this episode, and I think it said like the original episode went over by like 18 minutes.
Oh,
so
yes.
That is a lot to have to cut.
Yeah.
And so obviously they had to make a lot of choices about what to cut, but this would have really changed the interpretation, I think, of Mulder's sort of past lives regression, that this would have been a lot clearer suggestion that there's a possibility that it's that it is all in his head, because we don't really get much of that in the actual episode. Within the episode, everything that he imagines in his past lives gets kind of backed up. So there's no reason to sort of doubt it, as far as I can see.
I know. And this, I feel like this is actually like a super important scene to have been cut. Yeah. Because again, it doesn't it doesn't necessarily disprove anything that he believes, or that that any of that could be real. But it definitely supports the other side. It supports Scully's side, that maybe this isn't really happening. Maybe you are just subconsciously looking for these connections. And I think that's really important to notice. I mean, and even if that's the case, even if we accept this as part of the canon, which we can't accept it as canon because it was cut, but we can accept it as a possibility of at least something in the writer's intent, in the writer's minds, that this was their intent was to make this a little bit more even keeled. Then I think that we can take into account the idea that Mulder's beliefs are really the only issue here. And the fact that he believes that this is possible, still, it doesn't really bother me, because I don't think Mulder is in love with Scully at this moment. Like, I don't. And so even if he thinks this might be true, he's not betraying her. He's even if this is all in his head and this is just something he believes, even if he's thinking that this could be some sort of missed opportunity or whatever you were saying earlier, I think at the end of the day, Mulder is this really sort of lonely, sad guy. And I think the idea of a connection, of this sort of comfort, like to have someone, I think that's the kind of thing he would gravitate towards. And I think it's in terms of Mulder's feelings, in terms of his wanting this idea of these reincarnations and past lives to be true, I am still clinging to the thing that they say in the regression. And the evidence we have in the regression that all of these people surrounding him are in his past lives. He, you know, if he didn't see Scully at all, if he didn't see Cancer Man at all, if he didn't see Samantha at all, this would have been far stranger to me. I would have been like, okay, well, this is actually like really him. He's going back into Sullivan Biddle and he's really seeing her. And oh, he's going back into so-and-so and he's really seeing her. But the fact that he's seeing all these people from his current life in his dream, it's very Wizard of Oz-esque, you know, it makes me think that this is sort of Mulder creating this world in his mind, in his regression, very much like he created the circumstances of Samantha's disappearance in that regression. Right. And so I can look at it and say, this is entirely possible. If you want to read it the other way, you absolutely can. But my argument is that you can absolutely read it this way as well. And the last thing I want to say in terms of the idea of soulmates just kind of getting under your skin, because I don't really think a whole lot about soulmates. I don't necessarily buy into that idea. But I looked it up on Wikipedia because I was curious as to what the definition of a soulmate is. And would you like to hear it, Jen?
I'd love to hear it.
A soulmate is a person with whom one has a feeling of deep or natural affinity. This may involve similarity, love, romance, platonic relationships, comfort, intimacy, sexuality, sexual activity, spirituality, compatibility, and trust. That is a wide gamut of types of relationship that I am reading is possible with a soulmate. So even the idea that the word soulmate is used, I remember you said that you had a problem with the word soulmate. I think it still applies to all of these relationships. And it comes back around to one of the things that I really, really love about MSR. I mean, we all love the romantic aspect of MSR, right? But I always say that that's just one facet of their relationship. I think there's so many things to each other besides romantic. They're friends, confidants, partners, intellectual equals, sources of comfort, all of the things. Like, they're all of the things. And I find this episode so beautiful because it really pays attention to that. In one life, she's a parent. In another life, she's a sergeant. I love that. I love the idea that he is coming back in all of these lives in theory. This is all in theory. And they're learning. They're learning what they are meant to become. And we get to see that play out in the series. So were they thinking of this at the time? Probably not. But like I said, we need to take all of this into consideration when we are looking at this episode now, when we are looking at the episode and how we feel about it now and how it fits into the canon. I truly believe it supports the relationship of Mulder and Scully as it has always been presented to us, and it does not trample on that. And I have said my piece. Jen, please respond.
That's all really great. I mean, I think that bit that you read from the script has a huge influence on how I would interpret this episode. And if they had included that, I think that it would have been a much more even-handed, there's more than one way to look at this kind of thing. But we just didn't at the time have a whole lot to go on in terms of what to make of this. The only examples from Mulder's past life where Melissa appears, she's a romantic partner in both cases. That's all we had to go on. And we didn't have a lot else to think that this was a fabrication on his part. We could always, of course, have imagined that, but there just wasn't, the episode didn't give us a lot to sort of grab onto to believe that. And having that in there would have made a huge difference in terms of, at least maybe the flame war would have been a little less intense for us shippers. We could have said, but you know, this is all just Mulder's imagination. And I mean, looking back on it now, we can certainly sort of say it's cool because, you know, they weren't at that point in their relationship anyway. But at the time when we were watching it, we really, really wanted them to be at that point in their relationship.
No, and
we were 4 years in at that point. So
I get that.
We had been given very little, but, you know, we really wanted, you know, we were kind of at, I mean, it was very naive of us probably looking back on it, but we never knew which season was going to be the last one necessarily.
Right.
We didn't know this was going to be a 9-season show. And we did sort of wait in anticipation every week. Maybe this will be the week that they become canon. We never know.
Yeah.
We lived in hope. And so then to have this, it just was not what we were expecting.
I can completely understand and relate to that. You know, like I said, like I think that we hold on to those feelings. Like we've proven time and time again that it's hard to shake that. It is hard because
you
remember that's how you felt at the time. But like the reason that I, and this kind of brings me to my next point, which I think could be an interesting topic for us to talk about. The reason that I have gone from tolerating this episode to actively liking it is because I think, and I know the shippers are going to come after me, but I'm kind of with Chris Carter on the fact that I think that, like, he was trying to do something different with this relationship right from the very, very beginning. That evolved and that eventually changed. But what this episode tells us is that there are so many different versions of their relationship, and they are all important. And you keep coming back to the part or the idea that, like, oh, but Melissa was romantic in two of those lives. And just saying that is like elevating romantic love to more than or somehow higher than what he has with Scully, which I don't think is the case. I mean, you can say romantic love is what we wanted. That was what we were after. We wanted to get that. But I don't think anybody can claim that romantic love is a higher form of love than the love of a friend or the love of a parent or the love of any of those other things. And I think that's why I really like the idea that Scully isn't the same thing to him in every life. She's something different. And as these lives progress, she becomes the full-fledged Scully in 1996 that we see with him now. And as time bears out, they show proof of all of those different roles to each other.
Yeah.
And I find that more, it may not be as quote unquote shippy, but I find that more interesting. And I think it's just one of the things that I think makes their relationship sort of transcend the traditional romantic relationships we see on television.
Mm-hmm.
And this, none of this is undermining what you're saying in terms of how you felt at the time, because I think, like I said, I agree with you. I probably would have been upset at the time as well. But I can look back on this now and say, you know what? That's not what they're trying to say. They're not trying to say, well, guess Mulder missed out on his true love. Let's move on to episode 5. Like, I really don't think that's what they were saying. And I will stand by that.
I think you're making a very compelling point that, in many ways, we see Mulder's relationship with Scully here as more multi-layered, more sort of complex, deeper in a way, because it does have more than one facet. And whereas, you know, there's certainly a case to be made that a romantic connection is a pretty straightforward kind of, there's no indication that there's any real change from one life to the other between Mulder and Melissa. Whereas, you know, there is more of an emphasis on a change between Mulder and Scully, and that he is talking about Scully. You're right when he says about learning, about souls coming back together. And that is important, absolutely.
Souls coming back differently.
So I definitely, I can see what you're saying for sure. I think that when I like, if I can like just calm down my rage brain when I'm, when I'm thinking about the episode and when I'm watching it, and when I can sort of calmly and quietly remind myself, it's okay. You're in a safe space now. It's 2020. The flame war is over. You don't need to worry about this. They are canon.
Yeah.
Then I can sort of calm down a bit and say, okay, this was just a little side trip on the way to where they wound up eventually. And as like, you know, hardcore shipper at the time, obviously it didn't feel like a side trip. It felt like we were at a dead end.
Yeah.
But now looking at it, I can kind of try to remind myself, this was just an interesting little detour, we could say, using an ex-Spiley term. And if I try to think of it that way, then it's just another interesting facet to Mulder and Scully's relationship, which I totally agree with you is wonderful for so many reasons. And one of them is that it isn't just, you know, a very sort of simple, one-dimensional romantic relationship that every TV show can pull off. It's got all these different layers to it.
Right.
And one thing I was thinking about last night when I was watching it that kind of calmed my ardor slightly was I thought about the touchstone speech from Amor Fati, mm-hmm. which is quite, in some ways, if you just look at the dialogue, quite similar to sort of what's going on in this episode, where, you know, Mulder's talking again about the role that Scully played in this kind of fantasy world of his, not unlike what's happening in this episode. And he's telling her that you were my friend and you told me the truth.
Yeah.
And then, of course, he says, you know, you were my constant, my touchstone, which is, he could easily, you know, if they were at a different point in their relationship, he could easily have said all that in this episode. And obviously I was not alarmed or distressed when he said that in Amor Fati, because the context is different. Because, you know, obviously there's a lot of touchy-touchy going on there, and it's
they've come a long way. Yeah.
They've come a long way. So, but I love that speech, the one in Amor Fati, whereas I get all agitated by The Field Where I Die. But when I think about it logically, there's not that much difference in terms of what's being communicated in those two sort of speeches. So that kind of, I'm trying to kind of think of it more in those terms. So
yeah,
I might get there.
Well, and I mean, and it's important to remember too that like, it's, I'm not just making this up about the soulmates thing. Like, it's there in the script. There are multiple soulmates. It's not just about Melissa. Melissa is just sort of his key to finding this different world and learning about it and entertaining it as a possibility. And that is in the episode. Like, I'm not making that up. That's in the episode. And he sees mm-hmm. all the other people, you know? And so I feel like if you think about it that way, that there's this whole group of people that we're with, and like all of the people that we have in our lives, we are reincarnated and we are somehow thrust in with them together again in different ways every single mm-hmm. lifetime. I find that kind of cool. And I find that kind of unique as a concept of soulmates that I hadn't really heard before this episode. And I kind of liked that. And there's also something to be said too, I'm shifting gears slightly, but about Scully's speech to him, that she says she wouldn't change a day. And I think that's such an important thing to notice here at season four, where they are in their relationship. She wouldn't change a day. It's not like they're saying, oh, we have all these regrets because we're in love and we should be with each other. It's nothing about that. Like, that's not what this episode is about. The episode is about, this is you and me, and this is our relationship where it is now. We're exactly where we're meant to be. And I love the idea that it's just, like you said, it's a moment in time, and it changes and it evolves and it turns into something else. And we should be grateful that that happened, right? Because if that didn't happen, then this episode might have different meaning. But it did happen. They did become romantic. So That is very, very important canonical evidence to bring to the table when we're talking about this episode.
Absolutely. I think that definitely it has a very different meaning in the context of the rest of the series than it did at the time.
Yeah.
For sure. And I think, we definitely need to kind of remember that was a lovely scene between Mulder and Scully about, you know, where Scully says, I wouldn't change a day. And isn't that a great line where she says, well, maybe that fluke man thing, I could have lived without that just fine. Isn't that great?
I mean, that's it.
Just the warmth between them is palpable and it's so delightful. Throughout this episode, I should say that it's interesting to me that if at the time we had all watched it with the volume off, we would have thought it was the shippiest episode in history because body language is like so sort of intimate throughout this episode. There's this little sort of conversation they have in which he calls her Dana for the first time, maybe since season one.
Yeah.
And that, which is a big deal. It's like Dana alert, I wrote in my notes.
Yeah.
Which is like a signifier of, you know, we're having an intimate moment here. I mean, that's like, you know, by season four standard, that's like full on having sex, calling her Dana. So that's a big deal. There's like all the unnecessary touching and eye contact. And it's in many ways a very shippy episode when I sort of calm myself down and just look at it in, from that respect. And there's no sign that Scully is at all jealous to me when I'm watching it. I don't see any sign that Scully is jealous of Melissa or sees her as any kind of like interloper.
No.
And
she's worried about Mulder. She is only worried for him, concerned for him, even touched by what she's seeing. Because like she believes it necessarily, but because he does. And I find that so powerful. Like her reaction to his regression, that she is just like, man, like he's all in on this. This is pretty intense, you know, and what am I supposed to do with that information? And like you bring up the idea of like all this great close talking and touching and like them literally flinging in our faces the entire time. Hey, all of this quote unquote evidence to the contrary. We do have sexual chemistry and all of this sexual heat and energy is being thrown in our face like in, you know, defiance of all of the other things that are being said in this episode. So I enjoy that too. I enjoy that like they're telling us one thing and they're showing us another. I think that's true.
Much.
That's true a lot of the time, I think, with this whole platonic argument. But I mean, I don't know. I just think it's just, it's an interesting argument to have that like to be had that we make fun of platonic all the time, but that is where their relationship began and that's how it was rooted and that's how it grew and evolved. So I just can't sit back and say that just because we want them to be romantic, that they're the idea of them not being romantic in this episode or not having this, him not having this romantic vision of her is in some way less than what they are to each other because it isn't. We see the evidence like right in front of us. It's right in front of our face. So, yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that it is sort of a classic sort of X-Files kind of way of presenting things that you've got to look beyond the surface to sort of see what the real story is in this episode. And if you're just kind of like reacting, as indeed I did, then you may not get all the subtext.
Yeah.
But there's definitely a lot of subtext, as there always is on the X-Files. You can't necessarily take anything at face value. And there's a lot going on in this episode that actually sort of reinforces the strength of the bond between Mulder and Scully.
Right.
So if you, and by you I mean me, can sort of calmly and quietly watch those parts and just sort of think of the rest just, you know, in context, and especially with those other bits from the script that you very helpfully supplied us with, then I can try to get to the point where maybe I'll be able to enjoy watching this episode. I can tolerate it, I think, at this point.
Well,
maybe I'll eventually get to the point where I actually like it, but I feel like I'm getting there.
Let's divert off the soulmate thing, because we've been talking about that for probably nearly an hour, which is the huge big deal about this episode, I understand. But
that is the thing.
The other things that I think are very likable about this episode we haven't even really discussed yet. And so I think maybe we should do that. What do you think?
Yeah, I think there's probably more than just like one scene in this episode.
Right.
It's a solid episode.
It's the soulmate thing is kind of weaved throughout it. And that's what everyone remembers. But what people don't remember is that there's a purpose to all of this. Like, there's a purpose to him doing the regression. There's a purpose to him trying to get to her, trying to access her past life, because they're trying to stop this mass suicide from occurring. Right. And I wanted to talk about the case itself, because I think that this is the only episode that deals with this sort of cult, like with a mass suicide Jonestown type vibe. Right. And I think it's really upsetting and disturbing, but I think in such a great way. Like, it is so well done. I think the episode is so well shot. It's beautiful. It's directed wonderfully. I don't think that it's boring. I feel like I used to think this episode is boring, but all the recent times I've watched it, I'm actually really engaged by the plot, not just the Mulder soulmate stuff, but the actual case and the plot and what's going on with Ephesian and Melissa and this cult. I just love the way this episode is crafted. It's just another one of those beautiful season 4 episodes. And I love, like, Jonestown stuff. Like, I find that fascinating. I don't know if, like, how much you know about Jonestown. Like, are you familiar with, like, Jonestown and Waco? And
yeah, I'm quite familiar with it. I mean, I was sort of like 10 years old when Jonestown happened, so I actually kind of remember seeing it on the news. But some of our listeners may not know a lot about Jonestown, because they may not be quite as old as me and may not, I think everyone's probably heard the term, but they may not know many details. Would you care to share any?
Yeah, well, Jonestown was, Jim Jones, he was this really sort of charming cult leader who he brought all these people sort of under his wing. And it started out like this sort of almost like paradise where we're all going to have this, it's like a kind of like a church, but like everybody, it's a cult. It's totally a cult. And I think they went to, was it somewhere in South America? Uganda?
Yeah, it was Guyana.
Guyana, sorry. That was, wrong continent, I think. I knew what I was trying to say. But anyway, and they all, like a news, like a governor or a mayor or something went into town, and they were all sort of figuring out that these people wanted to escape. And so in a panic, he told everyone, well, it's time to kill yourself, essentially. And this is where the phrase drinking the Kool-Aid comes from, if anybody has heard that, because essentially it wasn't actually Kool-Aid, but they put poison in the cups, just like in The Field Where I Died. I think they probably lifted that directly from Jonestown. Yeah. But it's very much the same concept that they're going for here.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's a lot here that definitely is very reminiscent of Jonestown, the, like you say, sort of the drinking the Kool-Aid kind of scene. And I mean, they make an overt reference to it at one point. Skinner actually mentions, we don't want another Jonestown kind of thing. And even like the visuals, which are really quite disturbing, of all of the bodies after this mass suicide has happened. Mm-hmm. It's very similar to what I remember from the news footage of Jonestown. So that would be, especially for people watching it in 96, we were that much closer to when Jonestown had happened, so a lot of folks would remember that footage. So it's very reminiscent of Jonestown in a lot of ways, and also, of course, very closely connected to the Waco incident, which was only 3 years before this aired. And I don't know if the children in our audience know all about Waco, but in very brief, that's another cult. And another one that ended very badly. And I think that there's a lot of very direct connections with Waco, in the sense that it involved a raid on a compound that was being led by a cult leader, that there were, you know, families there. He had multiple wives. They were searching for illegal weapons. There were allegations of child abuse. The FBI were directly involved, and it ended tragically when the cult compound was burned down by the cult members, by the cult leadership, most likely, and 76 people died there. So that, I think and again, Skinner specifically mentions Waco as well. So I think this definitely has a Waco vibe to it, for sure. I think a lot of folks watching it would be like, oh yeah, this is just like Waco, because that was really quite recent at the time. So it does, yeah, it brings together, this was kind of like, it's very sad that this was like not an uncommon thing in the news back then, that these sort of like suicide cults. And so this kind of combines a couple of different sort of scenarios, and it is kind of fascinating. You and I have said before that, you know, we've always enjoyed sort of cult episodes of The X-Files, and this is a well-executed one. This is not a particularly like out there cult. This is a very realistic cult. This is very similar to what was actually happening at the time.
Right.
And I think they do a great job with the story.
Yeah. I totally agree. And I think that the performances are really good. I mean, I wanted to talk about Kristen Cloak in the role of Melissa. I'm curious to hear your take on this, because I've heard really mixed sort of reviews about her performance. But I think that she's great in this. And every time I see somebody say they don't like her performance, I really think that person just doesn't like this episode. I think she does such a good job, like going between the different personalities. And what a tough role to play. I mean, and I think she did a great job.
I think she does an amazing job. I've not really heard that many criticisms of it. I don't know if people think she overplays it or underplays it. I honestly can't imagine.
I don't know. I actually don't.
Yeah, to me, it's brilliant. She's. It's obviously a very tough role to play. In my research today, I learned that I'd forgotten that she was the lead in Morgan and Wong's short-lived show Space Above and Beyond, and so they already knew Kristen Cloak from that. Mm-hmm. And from what I understand, they kind of wrote this role with her in mind, and they knew what she was capable of. And so, because I mean, it would be hard to find an actress that could just walk in and play this role and to do all these other past lives. And she had very convincing voices. Sydney really did sound like a different person.
Yeah.
So, It's a tough role to play, and plus she's also very sympathetic, and even when she's just being Melissa, is very sort of like, it's a very intriguing. She really draws you in, and you really care about her.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with you. And did you know that she's married to Glenn Morgan, correct?
Yeah, she wasn't at the time, apparently. I had to look it up.
Yeah, when did that happen? I was curious, because I thought maybe they met on this episode, but you're saying they met before.
Yeah,
so.
According to Wikipedia, they married in 1998, and this aired in 1996. Space Above and Beyond, which was a sci-fi show, which my husband was a huge fan of, by the way, even though it only lasted one season. That aired in 95, 96, so I believe that he certainly knew her before that. I don't know if he met her on Space Above and Beyond, or if he already knew her and that's why he cast her there. I don't know, but I think he definitely, both Morgan and Wong knew her from their short-lived show. So I'm not sure exactly whether they were in a relationship yet at that point or anything, but they definitely weren't yet married. And we should also mention that Kristen Cloak is one of the co-writers, am I right, of RM9 in season 11.
Yep.
So she's a multi-talented person.
Yeah. Yeah. I wanted to give her a shout out because I think this was a really tough role and I think she did a really good job. And I think that like the only, I know, I think I hear a lot of criticism at times of David's performance, and I agree to an extent. Just the regression is what I'm talking about. And the only reason I agree is because I feel like he is slightly overplaying it, but because it's regression, I can forgive it, because I feel like when you're being regressed, like, you don't really have any control over your emotions. But the thing is, we've seen him regress. Like, we see him, and granted, we don't really see him. We only hear him. And then we see him later in season 7 doing his regression with Samantha. But he's just so much calmer. Like, this is a traumatic event that he's remembering. So it seemed to me like either this could support the fact that he really is remembering something and he's being affected by it, or he is not playing it up, but he's convinced himself this is true and he really believes it. And so he's that much more intense for that reason. So I like the idea that you can read that either way. I don't necessarily have a problem with the actual performance, because I think he's doing good at what he's doing. I guess I just have a problem with how intense he's playing this. So I don't know, maybe it's not like I don't buy it. I guess I'm trying to explain, like, it's not like I don't buy it. I just don't necessarily know if I would have played it that way, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I totally understand what you're saying. Yeah, it's a bit of a weird performance. You know how I feel about Mulder crying.
Yeah.
I've had issues with Mulder crying scenes in One Breath and in Redux 2. It's an unpopular opinion, but I just don't think David Duchovny does sort of crying, like really, really upset particularly well. I think he kind of tends to sort of, in lieu of being able to cry on screen on cue, which Gillian Anderson is like the best in the business at, as far as I can see. I think in lieu of being able to do that, he just really does these weird facial expressions that kind of I just find really strange. And so, yeah, I have to kind of close my eyes a tiny bit a couple of times in this episode because it's just like, what is happening here? And also, I mean, David usually plays things so sort of like cool that it is weird to see him playing it like this.
Well, and I think that that's an active decision on his part, though. I really do, because
yeah,
we don't get to see these displays of emotion from him. And so, yeah, he's got an ugly cry. Let's call it an ugly cry.
He's got a really ugly cry.
But it doesn't, I don't think it's bad acting. I think it's his, no. It's just, it's like a quirk of Mulder's. Like, yeah. That's yeah. just how he cries. It's like, I don't think that that's like a bad, like, I don't watch it and think, oh, you're not really crying. That's bad acting. I've never once thought that. I just thought, oh, it's a kind of an unusual cry. That's usually how I think. But I think lots of people have really weird cries. So I think it's like a very realistic thing. It's not, it's not super attractive, but I never don't buy it. Like, I don't look at it and think, oh, that he's acting terribly. I just think it's a little odd, if that makes sense.
Yeah. But, no, I think that's a very fine point. I think that, yeah, some people are just ugly criers, and I don't know about David Duchovny, but Mulder is definitely an ugly crier.
Right.
And I mean, it's tough to go up against Gillian Anderson because I think she's an absolutely gorgeous crier.
Oh, yeah.
So that's tough competition.
I mean, she also gets a lot more crying material.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, she does.
By
she gets
default.
A lot of practice.
Yeah.
And I mean, she's quite sort of like, she's even quite teary-eyed,
yeah.
not crying necessarily, but teary-eyed even throughout like this whole episode.
There are several moments where, yeah, she could tear up a little bit just like without even trying. And like, I would say there are a lot of episodes where like her single tear should just earn an Emmy all on its own.
Honestly, right? Yeah. Oh my God. Scully and the single tear.
How does
I'm
she
in love with it.
Do
so.
That? Yeah. I don't know
how does she do that.
It's
like, so good at it.
Yeah, it is pretty amazing, and I agree with you completely.
She really brings it when it comes to that kind of emotion. She's mm-hmm. just so good at it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, Mulder not as good, but you know, I'm gonna give speaking about Mulder, I want to give a very brief shout out to the fact that this may be one of the only episodes where he gets to actually be an expert in psychology. He
yes.
actually says what we witnessed meets the criteria established in the DSM-4. I mean,
yeah.
it's like something an actual psychology expert would say,
mm-hmm.
Which is so rare that we get to hear Mulder actually be the expert in psychology that we are told he is, but so rarely get to see him do. So I'm just, chef's kiss for that. Thank
yeah.
you, Morgan and Wong, because we almost never see that.
I love that. I love that.
It's fantastic. The whole multiple personality thing is kind of an interesting subject in and of itself as well. So that's an interesting exploration.
Right. Which is also, I think, especially with that deleted scene that I referred to, something that I think is left completely plausible.
Yes.
As to what we're witnessing here with Melissa.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So,
definitely.
Yeah. So, I mean, I like the idea that we can look, I mean, even Mulder and Scully, we are Mulder and Scully, and we can look at all the different possibilities of what's going on this episode. There's just so many layers. I think it's just very fascinating.
Really, really are.
Yeah.
And I also wanted to also say 100% agreement with you about it's a gorgeously shot episode. It looks beautiful. Rob Bowman, I think he might be my favorite director. I always really love the look of his episodes. And this
yeah.
one for sure is gorgeous. And Mark Snow, I think the score in this episode is amazing too. So
yes,
it's a very, very well done episode for sure.
Yeah.
We get a little poetry at the beginning of the ending. And I'm like, what is with this monologue? Like,
yeah.
it's a little dense. But I only realized that's actually from a poem by Robert Browning entitled
Paracelsus. Yeah.
Which I did not know before, which apparently is like a 5-chapter poem or something like that. So that's a little something I learned today. little literature knowledge. It's quite beautiful.
I love the idea that you literally had not watched this since 1996.
I'm pretty sure I have.
I love that. And that I got you to watch it. My power, Jen. My power.
It's your power, Annie, and the power of the podcast and the power of the listeners, because I know the listeners were keen for us to talk about this. And so I'll do anything for X-Files Diaries. I will watch The Field Where I Died. And you know what? I'm a better person for it.
I think you are. I love it. I just love having these conversations with you, Jen. This is so much fun. It's
so, you know. I love hearing different perspectives, and I love the X-Files, and there is so much to like about this episode, and I really do want to kind of bring it into my heart. So I feel like it's almost there. It's knocking on the door of my heart. So that's a step in the right direction.
I think the first step in the direction of embracing this episode is embracing all of the things Mulder and Scully are besides lovers. And I think that's something that shippers have a problem doing. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing, because we all want that to be. We all love that part of their relationship, and we want to see it. And we didn't get to see it very often. But, you know, there were so many other great parts that we saw, and we saw all the little itty-bitty romantic parts scattered throughout the entire series. You know what I mean? So,
yeah. Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I think that it was certainly back in the day, it was really easy in the fandom context to kind of get entrenched in your position. Like, I'm a shipper, and ship. And you know, the no Romos being like, no, I never want to see them together. There's a huge middle ground there that tends to get ignored. And, you know, especially, you know, fandoms do, just by their nature, tend to kind of split off into different sort of factions. And it is easy to get very sort of like bullheaded and entrenched in your faction, which I definitely did. I'll admit that for sure as a shipper when this was airing. But there's a huge middle ground between, you know, ship, and I never want to see them together at all. There's a huge middle ground of all the other things they can be, that you can be important to each other without it necessarily being romantic and or sexual. And that we as viewers can be like very emotionally invested in the relationship without it necessarily wanting it to be romantic or sexual. It was very interesting. I just this week coincidentally had a conversation with someone in another fandom, and I was like, your post sounds super shippy, but you say you don't ship this pair. I'm just kind of confused. And it was a really good conversation. She explained how she's asexual, aromantic, but you know, she just loves their connection. And I was like, you know what? I'm learning here at the age of 51 more about the world and about how you can be very invested in a relationship, and it can mean a lot to you without it wanting to be a romantic one. And so I'm starting to kind of, you know, be a little bit more open-minded about, you know, it's not just shippers or not shippers.
Right.
There's a lot in between. And just because you don't ship a pair doesn't mean that you're opposed to them being a pair, or that you're opposed to the ship necessarily. You just don't see it. And I think I kind of get into this mindset of, if you're not a shipper, then you're against the ship and you're against me.
Right.
And I need to get past that mindset.
Right. And I mean, don't get me wrong. I am thrilled to death that it went there and that they got that part of the relationship, because I do think that they deserved all of the parts of their relationship.
Absolutely.
But it's just like you said, there's a huge wide gap. And I think that these two, because of the way this relationship developed and because of the way it was built on trust and on friendship and on all these platonic foundations, it became something different. It became, even when it became romantic, it became something different. And I often wonder, because I have this thought a lot when one of the conversations comes up on Twitter or wherever, when people say, oh, do you think they ever get married? Do you think Mulder and Scully would ever get married? And as much as I like that idea in theory, there's always a part of me, that a little niggling part of my brain, that says that doesn't feel right. Why doesn't that feel right? I'm a shipper. Why doesn't that feel right? And it's not that I actually believe that we have some canonical evidence that that did happen at some point. And we could talk about that on another show. But I think it's one of those strange things that, like, if it never happened, I'm okay with that, because I think that what they have kind of transcends that in a weird way. And that little part of me that stops me from being all in on the marriage thing is that little part is the part of me that can accept the field where I died as pro MSR, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I getcha. I getcha. I agree actually kind of on the marriage thing as well. They just don't strike me as let's get married type people because their relationship has been so unconventional.
Yeah.
And marriage is very conventional. You know, speaking as a married person, I'm in no way opposed to it, but I can see that it wouldn't be for everyone and that their relationship is so unique
mm-hmm.
that it's hard to sort of put it in the category of other relationships and say, well, you know, they should get married because that's what people do. I mean, good, you know, by all means, if you want to sort of headcanon in a marriage, and we definitely can do that.
Oh, and I do, for the record.
Some opportunities for that. But it does, I agree, it does feel a little weird for them because everything about them has always just been a little different. And I mean, that's one of the things I love about them. You know, as much as I was like hardcore shipping year after year, there's also so much to enjoy about the relationship other than just waiting for it to become canon. Thank God it eventually did, so that I can just calm the fuck down and watch seasons like 1 through 7 and just enjoy them for what they were.
Exactly.
Because every aspect of the relationship is amazing and well done and well written and well acted. And that's you don't see that a lot in different television shows. So, you know, there's plenty of romantic relationships in TV, but there's nothing like Mulder and Scully.
Yeah, and that's an interesting point too, because like, even like, again, talking about the idea of the marriage thing, that sort of pinpoints them as one thing, you know?
Yeah.
If you say, okay, well, they're married, then that suddenly, I don't want to say the word downgrade because I'm married. I absolutely don't think that's possible. But I think for a relationship that's been formed like theirs, if you suddenly pinpoint them into one box, it changes them.
Yes.
Like it makes all of the other stuff kind of different or less than. And I think that's why, I think at the end of the day, that's the reason I have a hard time with the idea of suddenly now they're husband and wife. They're not Mulder and Scully anymore. But all of that being said, please don't get me wrong. I love the idea that they got married and I absolutely believe that they did. But there is that little part of me that always is like, that feels a little weird. Why does that feel a little weird? And I come back to that often. So I just wanted to bring that up.
It's a great point. I you know, I go both ways at any given moment on the whole idea of, you know, getting married. Because on the one hand, you know, sort of traditional shipper, I'm like, married.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. It's kind of like we can't really name what they are to each other. Husband and wife just doesn't quite do it.
Yeah.
It's Mulder and Scully. That's what they are to each other.
Exactly.
And they're unique and they don't, you know, coming up with a name for it is it's elusive, and that's what it's meant to be.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, we've talked a lot about this episode. If there's anything else you want to bring up, let me know, but there's one more scene I wanted to talk about.
Okay.
The scene in the car where they have their little fight. I wanted to bring that
up. Oh, yeah.
Because I was trying to think of another time in the series where they kind of, where he like yells, like he's mad and they're having a fight. And they do that so rarely that and I love this entire episode, makes me tense, which I enjoy. But like that scene, I love that so much because it's like you guys are expressing emotion at each other and I enjoy that. Yeah. And can you think of another episode where Mulder yells at her like that? Like, or she yells at him? Like,
yeah, I'm trying to think of it. That sort of like intensity of emotion, I can't think of one off the top of my head, to be honest.
Yeah, it's rare. Like, it's not like they don't talk to each other intensely. They do. They raise their voices. They get intense. But like, I look at that scene and it just feels so uniquely fighty to me. Like,
yeah,
it's like a married couple having a fight. Like, that's what it feels like.
It's like a real fight.
it's
very emotional, I guess, because they do have kind of intense arguments, but they always seem very sort of like there's not a lot of emotion put into it, because they can, and which is great, because they can have these intense arguments and then drop it and then be friends again like immediately after, which is wonderful. But this one does feel a little different to me. You know, it just, it's obviously something that's Mulder's really feeling it. You know, when he says, you know, you saw it, you heard it, why can't you feel it? He's like, And I kind of noticed that Scully's slightly taken aback, I think, by it. She looks a little bit like, whoa, what's happening right now?
She does, but she has like a response, which I enjoy, and a good
she
one.
She does, yeah. Because she's kind of, you know, she's not going to be put off. She's not going to be intimidated by his emotions. Sometimes when someone comes at you like that, you just kind of want to be like, okay, pacify you.
Right.
But nope, Scully's never going to back down. Good for her.
Yeah, and I mean, I understand Mulder's frustration in this moment. Like, I really do, because we're 4 years into this, and he's like, why are we still having this argument? Like, you've always got this counter argument. You've always got something to disprove what I'm saying. But that's what she does. She's got that,
yeah.
And she has it ready. And she does look taken aback, but it's like she doesn't miss a beat without saying, but look at this, Mulder. Like, you need me to tell you this. You need me. Otherwise, you are going to just fly off like a crazy person. You know? And that is just such a great part of their dynamic. I really love that idea. And I think that there's so many great themes going on in this episode. It's almost like they tried to put too many in. But I think that, like, I really think it's a solid episode. And I mean, if you can kind of get past the idea of, you know, the possibility that Mulder maybe thinks this was a thing that could have happened, then you can appreciate it for all of the other reasons. And at the end of the day, it didn't happen. So we know that soulmates. Yes. Or at least they're not quote unquote soulmates in the term of word that we all like to think of soulmates as, even though that's not apparently the real definition. Did you have anything else that you wanted to talk about for The Field Where I Died?
I don't think so. I think that we've given it a very thorough discussion. And I mean, for an episode that I never even wanted to think about again, this has been really like a very good exercise for me in terms of, you know, it's always as a person and in my therapy with my therapist, I am always trying to face my fears. And so it's healthy for me to sort of face something that I've been avoiding for these 24 years. So I think that it was good for me, and I have grown as a person because of it. And I'm not going to be triggered every time I hear The Field Where I Died now. Now I'll be able to sort of say, oh, yeah, there were actually some good things about that episode, and I'm going to remember those things. So I feel good about it.
One more thing that I forgot to mention that I wanted to bring up. There's something else he says in the regression that I think is really interesting when he's talking about Melissa. I agree. But he says we're always taken away. OK, like the idea that they're always taken away. And who does that sound like? It sounds like Scully. She's always taken away over and over and over. They are ripped apart. Throughout this series, they are ripped apart from each other, and they somehow find their way back over and over and over and over again. And I find that lovely. Again, that he's conflating these past life, quote unquote, memories with what actually happens in this current life with Scully.
I think that's a solid point.
Yeah, and that really struck me when I watched it. The idea that he says we're always taken away, and I feel like I'm watching The X-Files, and Mulder has to leave, and then he's dead, and then Scully's abducted, and then she's kidnapped, and then this is happening, and then they're broken up, and all of these other things that happen to them when they're repeatedly taken away, and yet they repeatedly find their way back to each other. And if that's not soulmates, Jen, I don't know what is.
You're absolutely right. That's kind of that's almost the definition of a soulmate, really, I think, to me, which is, you know, no matter what sort of fate and the universe and life have in store in terms of trying to split you up, you always come back together again. And there's plenty of examples of that throughout the series. And I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, guys, that was a really fun conversation. I'm really, really excited and anxious to hear about what people have to say about this episode, because I know there are a lot of things to say about this episode.
Yes,
but let us know. Tweet at us at XFD Podcast and let us know what are your thoughts. And thank you guys for listening. And we will be back with you in a couple weeks with another episode of X-Files Diaries.
Bye.
Thank you.